at 7. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? The Edgy Directors Showcase. Encourage you to check this out. Get your tickets at wrctheater.org or tonight at 7 right there at the opening box office right there.
Looking forward to a great show.
It's going to be a good one. Thanks so much for a great week, everybody. We'll have more good stuff for you next week. Terry, have yourself a good weekend.
You too.
And stick around, everyone. We've got Morning Magazine coming up here at WFHR.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Officials in Memphis are bracing ahead of tonight's scheduled release of body cam video, allegedly showing police beating a driver after a traffic stop. Tyree Nichols died 3 days later. The ex-officers charged with second-degree murder. Reporter Chris Fox is in Memphis.
Memphis is a city on edge, sad, grieving, and angry. All of those emotions on display Thursday night at a candlelight vigil at the local skate park referred to as Tyree Nichols' happiest place.
Oh, Lord! Wow! Bitch! And every time...
Rovon Wells, Tyree's mother, made an appeal for people to nonviolently protest.
I don't want us burning up our cities, tearing up the streets, because that's not what my son stood for.
Many here also questioning why release the video on a Friday after dark. Chris Fox for CBS News, Memphis.
A January 6th rioter is scheduled for sentencing today in Washington. CBS's Stacey Lynn.
33-year-old Julian Cater pleaded guilty to using a chemical spray on Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick just hours before the officer died. Sicknick's family believes Cater is primarily responsible for his death and is urging the judge to give him a harsh sentence.
Holiday shopping be darned. The Commerce Department says consumer spending fell 0.2% in December. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
The most important aspect of this report is a measure of inflation. That is called the PCE index. And there has been some improvement. Year over year, prices rose by 5% last month. That's down from the 5.5% increase in November.
Customers will have to beat it to the pharmacy on time because a couple of large chains are shortening their hours. The Wall Street Journal says CVS is cutting or shifting hours at about two-thirds of its locations in March. Walmart pharmacies will close at 7 p.m. instead of 9 to deal with pharmacist shortages. California farmers who've been battling drought are getting a boost from all the rain that devastated parts of the state this month. Donald Seymour is with Sonoma Water.
It really took that type of sequential number of storms to really saturate the watershed and create just a huge amount of runoff into the two reservoirs, which are basically now both fully recovered.
A beloved college basketball broadcaster has died.
It's one and done, and North Carolina right now is facing that early in this ballgame.
Billy Packer worked 34 Final Fours for CBS and NBC. His family says he'd been hospitalized for 3 weeks for several issues and ultimately died of kidney failure. Billy Packer was 82. The Dow is up 66. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
As a Walgreens pharmacist, I talk with people all the time about little tips and tricks for filling their Medicare prescriptions, like taking advantage of Walgreens 90-day refills to save them a trip, or using Refill by Scan, which is super easy and right on your phone. And for anybody worried about prescription costs, I say, hey, we got you, with low-cost copays on many medications.
Let's talk about making things easier. Walgreens is here. Fill your way and save at walgreens.com/Medicare. See pharmacists for restrictions and exclusions.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for snow this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies. High temperatures reach up to 32, west winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, 9 above. Chance of snow tomorrow, highs around 15, cloudy skies. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tomorrow with another dusting Sunday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 22.
Good.
Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this January 27th, 2023. It is 10:05 on the clock, and you've got your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 10:30, we're going to welcome in Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent, along with Jennifer Wilhorn, 4K Administrator. Right now, joining us on the phone, our good friend Linda Brost, with Administrative Specialist with the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Central Wisconsin. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, James.
That is a tongue twister sometimes for me. That title in there and all that—that's good. But we need to. It's a good title. I want to make sure to get it in there for you. How have you been?
It's great. Very good. Kind of plowing through winter, no pun intended. Although it doesn't look like we got as much as they predicted today, so we're happy about that.
Yeah. And the weather affects us all, obviously, and can really hinder or affect your day. It's a little bit different for you and your clients, though, when it comes to this. And I appreciate any time we have a chance to kind of focus on that when it comes to a lot of the great resources that the ADRC has. I'm sure we'll be able to do that through our conversation. Linda, where would you like to start?
Maybe just touch briefly on what is Meals on Wheels and the role of the volunteer drivers, how important that is.
I think that's a good one. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea to start on, with the day that we're having today, too. The roads are a little slippery out there. Please be careful, everybody.
Yeah. I can explain. I'm sure everybody hopefully knows what the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Central Wisconsin is. But just to touch on that, we have 5 offices serving customers in Langlade, Lincoln, Marathon, and Wood counties. I'm at the Wisconsin Rapids office. And our goal is to promote choice and independence through personalized education, advocacy, and access to services that prevent, delay, and lessen the impacts of aging and disabilities in the lives of adults. And today, I wanted to talk about the benefits of volunteering and the ADRC's need for volunteers for our program.
When it comes to, let's start with Meals on Wheels. I really like the idea of the concept of Meals on Wheels. I think it goes back in like farther than we could really realize, you know, of neighbors helping neighbors, of people looking out for each other, of strangers looking out for strangers, if you will. I think that's a really, it's a beautiful concept and a wonderful idea. The ADRC took this and turned it into something that can be memorable and be game-changing for not just the client and the person receiving the meal, but for the people that are delivering the meals. It's honestly, there are a handful of things that I've been able to do in my life that I feel very humbled by. Special Olympics is one of the big ones, working at the Family Center and delivering Meals on Wheels when I was out in California. The relationships, the people that I met doing that, I'll never forget them. I have no idea the impact I made for them, but I know that the meals were meaningful and the conversations were needed. And I know the impact that they had on me was literally life-changing. And that's just, I got to do that for a couple months. I can't imagine what it's like for many longtime volunteers out there that do this quite often. The thing I also wanted to mention, too, when I was out there doing this, I was acting. And my schedule was insane, Linda. I'm all over the place, and I'm here one day, and I'm there the next. And some days I've got like 5 hours to kill, and other days I've got like a half an hour. But the ADRC worked with me on that. They were fine with it. Never once did I throw them a curveball. They were able to handle everything. Oh, you're going to be up in Northern California? Would you mind delivering this meal to this person or something like that? Oh, you can't do it today? That's okay. We understand. Like there was such a great collaboration involved in that. You guys really do work with people and their schedules when it comes to delivering these meals.
We do. And just like what you experienced when you lived in California, we are like that with our drivers. We have some that do a dedicated route one day a week, but two, you know, they might want to take a vacation or an emergency can come up, and we're always just so grateful for the time that they spend with us and we're, like you said, we can adjust schedules. We have drivers that are kind of on a on-call type thing to substitute, so they're kind of used to getting a last-minute call. Hey, can you come in and do this route? And I'm just amazed at, you know, the more yeses than nos that I receive. And I think our volunteers, too, benefit very much like you did doing that. It's just a great feeling.
Linda, how are we doing when it comes to volunteers for Meals on Wheels? So we could always do better, I know. We could always use more. But are we seeing decent numbers when it comes to this?
I think we are, especially considering COVID. Surprisingly, we had maybe two or three drivers kind of drop out during that time. You know, there was a lot of unknown confusion, and, you know, we respected that as well. But I'm surprised that we have the number of drivers that we do, all things considering what's happened in the past few years. We currently have 6 everyday routes, Monday through Friday, and then we have a 7th route that we have a driver do on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and he delivers a hot meal and frozen meals to people living in rural areas on those days. We've got customers, you know, as far north as Arpin, way up there, and then down by Nakusa, because we don't have a regular hot meal route that goes to Nakusa. Port Edwards is kind of the stop for that, you know, as far as, so it's pretty interesting. You know, we changed that up a little bit with the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and revamped our routes a bit so that we could accommodate additional customers that wanted to eat. I'm proud to say that we do not have a waiting list on customers that are waiting to get on the routes, but some days it gets a little, the routes are pretty fluid, so it would be nice if we could get enough, you know, a few more volunteer drivers so that we could establish, you know, yet another route. But we're working on it. I think we're going to be able to do that and soon.
When it comes to that, because we focus on the volunteering, and rightfully so, we need more volunteers, like Linda was just telling you there. But I don't think I do this enough as an interviewer, ask the other side of this, and I'm glad you brought this up. If I'm somebody out there listening, and I could really use to be a part of this, being a person that receives a meal, is there a way I can go about being on that, finding out about that, and being in part of the rotation?
Sure. Now, are you talking as a customer or
yes, as a customer?
Volunteer?
If I'm a customer and I could use a meal.
Sure. They just need to call our local number, which is 715-421-0014. We also have a toll-free number that I can give at the end of the show, but they can just call that number and ask to speak to a resource specialist, and that specialist would go over the assessment form with them. They would first determine if they're eligible. They have to be age 60 or older, and they have to have a situation where it's difficult for them to cook. Many of our people can't stand for long periods of time to cook, or they can't shop for themselves. There's other ones that the specialist goes over with them. And then the specialist checks with us to see what availability we have, like what day would it be. They give us the address, and we quickly, most of the time, are able to figure out what we can do to help that particular customer.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've touched on this before. The meal is important nutritionally, obviously, but the conversation and the interaction is just as important. And when I mention this, I know that sometimes that can seem awkward at first. You're walking up to a stranger, you're handing them a meal. It's not something that you do every day. So it can seem a little like that. Well, they're in the same boat receiving the meal. It's a little awkward for them too at times. And you're both in this this situation. And I'll be honest, I'm not the greatest at making friends or meeting new people and those kind of things. I've always struggled with that. When I was doing this, it's never been easier for me in my life. Because while it seems awkward on the surface, think about what you're doing. You're bringing somebody food. We all love that. Nobody's ever been unhappy when they receive food. We all love getting that. So you got a built-in icebreaker right there for you. And once that the ball gets rolling, the conversation just flows. And you're so thankful to have this moment with this person. And you never know, you may even make new friends, make new relationships. One last thing I did want to ask about this too, Linda, because I've noticed in talking to listeners, not just around here locally, but in other states, I teach in Chicago, and I had a student a couple months ago when I brought up Meals on Wheels say, "Oh yeah, I do that." And I was a little taken back because she's 19. I'm like, "Oh, that's great." Are we seeing some young people volunteering for these things? Because we certainly could use young people doing this.
We have had that from time to time, where they might be on summer break and they want to volunteer, want to get involved with that. But yes, I've noticed a trend with that, and again, even that itself is fluid with that. But younger people that might do it even on their lunch hour. We have younger volunteers, and they can come in during their lunch hour, and I think that's great that they're willing to give up that time, as for most of us lunch break is pretty sacred, but they're willing to give that up in order to deliver meals. I think that's just wonderful.
Yeah. I will say that right away, it's a great thing to have on a college application or a job application. It looks really, really good. There's that part of it that can't be taken lightly, certainly. But again, when you get those the perspectives you get when you're a young person and talking to older people, talking to people who have lived life, you just don't know organically what kind of life knowledge, things, life hacks, all this different stuff you can get from these situations. It's such a benefit. There are some things as far as work-wise and filling out for college applications. I don't want to take lightly. They're important, but man, the feelings and the life lessons that you can learn and all this different stuff. It's such a great, wonderful thing that's just sitting right there for you. And all you got to do is drop off a meal, during your lunch break or something like that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I was just going to say it's great. One other thing that I think is really very helpful. We have volunteers that have been with us for years, and maybe some not as long, but I'm always amazed at when the volunteers come to me because they do have a concern about a customer. They're used to seeing them, on their feet or just different things, and that often they're able to tell that something might not be right, whether it's a memory issue or they're concerned that maybe the client is struggling not to fall, just things like that. And when we contact their family members to relay those concerns, they're so appreciative that somebody is actually watching out for them and then going the step to let them know, hey, I think your mom, you might want to talk to her. It seems like she might be having some problems falling. Like they often confide in the driver, things like that. And so they'll come to us and relay that. And I think that's a wonderful, an additional safety gap. It's just great.
Speaking with Linda Brost, administrative specialist with the ADRC, somebody who is incredibly good at what they do, Linda, I'm so glad you brought this up. It's oftentimes I get done with a conversation about Meals on Wheels and I forget to mention this part of what it plays into, because you're right about this. I actually have never shared this story. In part because the gentleman was still alive. He has passed in the last couple of years, so I feel a little safer sharing it, even though nobody out there listening would know this person. He's in California and all that, but I went to his house, and he was the person that I had been to the most. I had the closest relationship with. And I'm knocking, and I'm knocking on his door, and he's not answering. And I look in there, and he's on the on his favorite chair, and he's kind of holding his chest like you see a lot of people doing who might be having a heart attack.
Sure.
So I kind of jimmy his screen door open. I get in there. I'm calling 911. They thankfully, in the area he was in, they had somebody nearby. So they show up, and we're thinking it's a heart attack. We're worrying about a lot of he had gas. He had it really. It turned out it wasn't nearly that bad. It wasn't nearly as bad as we thought it was or anything like that. But
yeah, but, I guess everybody was happy that that was the case.
But he didn't have anybody. He had no family. His kids were all in Europe. And just being with him in those 5 minutes, I'll never forget that. That 5-10 minutes, whatever it was, it felt like it was forever in some ways, and it felt short in others. And the relief on his face, the laughter that we shared after that, it could have been worse. And I was thankful to be there for that moment. And it is stuff that it is such a great thing to bring up. I appreciate you mentioning that. That's a really strong point to this, the being able to. Certainly, that's not what it's about, and I don't think you would want to go there delivering this meal. Hey, how you doing in there? Everything all right? Like, you don't want to be, you're not a police officer. You don't need to check it.
Sure.
But it is good. It is nice, an added bonus to this, and that's a really key thing to bring up. Something else that in your notes that I noticed too when going over the idea of paying it back. How a lot of people who have had family members use Meals on Wheels have kind of often become volunteers. So I think that's a really nice note to bring up, too.
Yes, we have a few that's why they opted to volunteer, because they felt compelled to pay it back, like you say, and you don't want to kind of pay it forward type thing. So, yeah, like my note said, too, we get people, volunteers from all different situations. It's just really great working with them, you know, and to see their dedication on that. And something too I'd like to mention, well, we've had a few days where we did have to cancel meal delivery due to the weather, either too cold or what have you. And the people are really great with that. We provide them with a snow meal, what we call the snow day meals. It's enough. It's dried foods and that can provide two meals. But I rarely have anybody complain about it being closed. But I do point out, you know, we have some volunteers that are older than the people they're delivering meal to. So we have to think about their safety as well being out there. And I think they're appreciative that we're mindful of that. So it's always a balancing thing like that in the winter. You know, nobody likes to see the meals get canceled, but you can't stop Mother Nature.
No, nobody can. I'm really glad you mentioned that too, though, Linda, because, again, another great point, I think, to bring up. The idea that there are people delivering meals that are older than the people that are receiving them, that we appreciate them doing that. That should not be on them. That's one of those ones. As a society, we should be stepping up and delivering those meals and making sure that, you know, people are able to enjoy these meals, but also the people that have like worked very hard to kind of earn some get a break. I don't want to sound like we don't appreciate that and don't want to, and, you know, certainly there are people that volunteer because not only do they enjoy it, it's fun for them. They get a chance to do some of these things we're talking about.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that young people
have that to do.
And one more thing that I think is important to bring up with this subject, and again, one that I don't bring up nearly enough as an interviewer, the ADRC benefits from the volunteering hours donated in the form of a matching grant funds from the government. So another key reason why it's really important to have good numbers for this, so the ADRC can continue to get good, you know, funding and keep doing what they're doing for our communities.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there more details to that, Linda? Because that's one that I don't think a lot of us are familiar with. Or is it pretty much that's the
I'm
gist of it?
I'm not quite 100% on how that works. I don't know, like, how many hours, and that would actually be something I'm kind of curious about now that you mention it. But they like it says, there's matching grant funds from the government, but yeah. I'm not sure how that works.
We know that it exists. We know that it definitely, yeah. The better numbers we have volunteering, the better it's going to be for you guys. So know that much.
Sure.
And that's actually more than enough, I think. You know, when it comes to that, we encourage you to please be able to. What are some of the general benefits of volunteering? I think we've touched on some of that, but let's go over a little bit of that as we're wrapping up here, Linda.
I think for the volunteers, you know, just getting out and moving can improve mood, you know, especially during the colder months. You know, there's a lot of people that might suffer from a little bit of depression, things like that. And just getting out and doing something for somebody else, I think, is a really great mental boost, just getting out there, getting to, you know, to see people, especially some of our really elderly ones where there's just so much history. You had touched on that earlier, but just for people to, you know, hear a bit about that is really amazing, because I think we sometimes forget what was going on 50 years ago, even 60 years ago, and that. So I think it's a little bit of education too, but it's just, it can improve self-esteem. Again, you're doing something for somebody else.
That's a really good one.
You know, I think it's just a really great way to do all that, including loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have couples that volunteer, but also we have single people that do. You know, they may have lost a spouse. You know, we've had that situation, and the remaining spouse just wants to get out and do something for somebody instead of dwelling on their loss. And I think that's very helpful to them.
Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of statistical information that'll show you how volunteering can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's, which that catches my attention right away.
Yes, I'm not sure what the correlation is with it, but when I was reading the information, I thought that was interesting. I would think it could maybe even lower blood pressure a little bit. I don't know.
That's interesting.
That
it's the second thing on the list. I've got a list in front of me here, and it comes from comes to us from ALZ.org. That's the Alzheimer Association website, and how helpful volunteering can be. And actually, the second thing on the list is that, Linda. That's nicely done by you. That's
okay. Well, I took a stab in the dark, and I was right. I know for me, maybe it's not topic related, but I enjoy some of the relationships, even though it's just via the telephone, and getting to know the various people, not only in Wisconsin Rapids area, but all over the region, because we answer the phones, all the offices answer. And it's just really neat when they start to realize it's me that answered the phone,
and they
ask how I'm doing. And they're probably calling to cancel a meal or something like that. And we get to chit-chatting. So I very rarely get to see any of these people. But, you know, the staff, too, has forms a friendship. And it feels good to know that, you know, when we have one of those days where it's just so hectic and that, I can always count on getting a phone call from somebody. You know, they either need to cancel or they might have a question. And it's just really nice to have that break.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Busy day.
And leading to graceful aging. You know, just in case anybody out there is unfamiliar with this, we're all getting older. You're older now than you were before this segment started. We all are. It's the game that we all sign up for, that none of us sign up for. This is the way it works. Not only do you get to see a bit of aging in front of you and stuff with talking to some of these clients clearly and stuff, but it physically and quite scientifically can lead to, you know, aging more gracefully and understanding this better, having more of an appreciation of your, I think one of the best friends you can have the older you get is perspective, and it gives you some of that. It gives you a little bit more of that, and I don't think that you can take lightly either.
Absolutely. That's excellent. Yes.
Linda, we've done a nice job of talking about encouraging people to be volunteer drivers. Now let's tell them how they can sign up. How can people find out more information and be a driver for the ADRC?
Sure. The Wisconsin Rapids office, local number is 715-421-0014, or they can call our toll-free number at 888-486-9545. They could also visit our website. There is a form that one can fill out, and it gets emailed to our clerical box. And our website is adrc-cw.org. It's real short, real easy to find online.
Mm-hmm. Linda, always greatly appreciate the time. Please say hi to everybody over there for us, and you guys have a great weekend.
We will. Thank you, James.
Thank you for the time. Take care. And to all the drivers out there, be safe, and thank you. We appreciate all of what you do. We'll take a break. We'll come back and have some more fun here on Morning Magazine at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left pad save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for snow this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies. High temperatures reach up to 32, west winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, 9 above. Chance of snow tomorrow, highs around 15, cloudy skies. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tomorrow with another dusting Sunday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 22.
Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine, part two for this January 27th, 2023. 10:32 on the clock, and you got your host, James, here. And I am joined right now by our good friend, Craig Brorn, Wisconsin Rapids Public School Superintendent. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
Still always looking good. The guy comes in here every time, outdressing me, outstyling me. No, you look good, Craig. It's nice to see you. And you brought a friend with you. We have Jennifer Wilhorn with us, 4K Administrator. Good to meet you, Jen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
It's great to have you guys in studio today. Thanks a lot for being here. Appreciate it. A lot to talk about, so let's get right into it. Let's get into the Pitch Early Learning Center and explain to the audience what that is and some of the details of that.
Absolutely. So what I'll do is just give a little preemptive information about location and use of a what would be considered a previously vacant or minorly used school, because we recently transitioned Pitch, which of course was an elementary back in the day, here in Rapids, and then was closed, and those kids were dispersed to other elementaries that we currently operate, and then the Boys and Girls Club had leased that a portion of that building for quite some time. And which was great, but their move to their new building then left that building vacated, which provided the district an opportunity to have some pretty significant discussions around how we better utilize that, and then how we potentially consolidate services, that being early childhood and four-year-old kindergarten. And that's where the conversation around, you know, what that kind of means programming-wise and collaboration-wise, and why that's an asset to the district. And just point out the fact that Pitch is pretty much fully used now 5 days a week as a early childhood center. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jen for some more specifics.
Sure. We were able, when we transitioned to Pitch Early Learning Center, to move four of our 4K sites to that building. And then we have four sections of our special education early childhood at that site as well, which provides maximum opportunities for collaboration between those two programs. We're able to streamline some of our support services. So things like occupational therapy, speech and language, those kind of programmings can occur in that single setting. And then our early childhood teachers are able to collaborate with the 4K teachers so that we have just excellent services for our students.
That's fantastic. It's also part of what is encouraging to me about this is this is an issue nationwide. You know, you see in Wisconsin a lot of this, certainly, and in the Midwest you do. But throughout the whole nation, I'm seeing stories of this, of a school closing, and not just what do you do with the kids, but what you do with the services that that school provided, or what you do with the building. You know, that is a big crux, too. Most communities are sitting there with a ghost building or with kids in flux. And as somebody who was moved around a ton growing up, and I would be, we'd be learning math in this class. I go to another school, they're done with math. It's rough. It's not easy to flip school to school to school, like those kind of things. Thinking of that as a kid, to be able to do that, and the transition is that much smoother and that much more familiar for them, the routine of it. We all understand the kids need routine, that a lot of these basic things that they're kind of deprived of in these situations. Sounds like you guys have worked as best as we can a way to make this as smooth as possible for these kids.
Yeah, there's kind of two schools of thought on that, because we also still operate some 4K programming at other elementaries, that being Grant, Woodside is a couple of examples. And the reason behind that thought process was those schools and the clientele they serve aren't quite as closely associated with just flatly the geographic location of Pitch Elementary, or the former Pitch Elementary, which is now the Early Learning Center. And just for quick clarity's sake, early childhood is what references students with special needs that are like 3, 4, and 5 years old. And the bulk of those that we serve are 3 and 4 at that Pitch facility. And then 4K, of course, everybody knows, because that's been around for quite some time now, 4-year-old kindergarten. But so that idea is, there's two schools of thought in that. One being, if I'm 4 years old and attending the elementary school that I'm going to attend through kindergarten, first grade, second grade, all the way to fifth grade, there's some benefits to that and technically less of a transition. The other would be the idea that there's benefits to having kids collectively and cohesively in one location for all of the reasons you mentioned. In addition, one of the things that I think is less obvious to parents or community members, and that is the benefit for staff and the benefit for, again, the cohesiveness of services. So when you have things like you know, early childhood admittedly is limited. There's not, you know, we don't have 400 early childhood kids. It's not enough to warrant, you know, a lot of 1.0 FTE staff hires and so forth. So that tells you that we're going to have to figure out how to piece things together. And so if you can consolidate that, and provide services, kids and families are actually getting you know, more bang for their buck, and the benefit to staff of being all in that building with early childhood and 4K being able to collaborate, you know, anytime for the most part is hugely beneficial.
You don't have to do a lot of digging to come across that. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to talk about this, because I'm going to say something very controversial. I love kids. Kids are great. They're our future. You know, I think we all understand that, the majority of us as a society, but we don't take enough time to talk about the people who are spending so much time with our kids and teaching our kids. We talk about teachers, they're like offensive linemen in football. all, man. The only time we seem to talk about teachers is when something wrong happens. We don't give credit. We don't take the consideration. So many of these things that we just take lightly. Oh, the kids are moving around. We're focusing about the kids moving around. Well, what about the staff? What about these guys? Well, their routine is kind of thrown in flux here, too. And then certainly services that they like to do. They got into this job. Nobody got into teaching to become a Rockefeller. You get into this because you care about kids. You care about the cause and everything. So, well, what do I do with this? To have these things lined up. And to be able to take care of these things is great. And then, of course, obviously, to be able to offer them to children. All this is a really good system, a really good way of going, but it didn't happen overnight, I imagine. Took a lot of people to work on this and make this happen, and probably years of planning and that. How did that go about, and how has it been, like, the results, like, once you see them? Jennifer, I'll let you...
Sure. So you're right. We did start talking about this several years ago, and it was a collaborative effort between myself as the 4K director and then our director of special education at the time. And so we started to dream about how that facility could be best be used. A lot of tours, a lot of meeting with other people in that area to talk about how we could best utilize it. And then moving forward, it was interesting because we were taking early childhood teachers and 4K teachers that had been at different locations, and we wanted to bring them together to form a new school and a new staff. And those kinds of relationships don't develop overnight. It was really purposeful, the team building and the work that we did, because we know that in order to serve our students as best we can, we need to have the best staff relationships and develop a common philosophy so that we're able to move forward together. So the last year and a half, there's been a real focus from our pitch staff on how we do that. And of course, we always think about the teachers, but you know, we can't forget those other people like the custodian, our food service, all our librarian. All of those people have had to come together with a common philosophy for how we best serve our students and then also our families. So we have these young students, and they're very important, but we also know that we're only part of their day. Mm-hmm. The rest of their day, they're with their families in their home environment, and how do we provide support to the parents, to the grandparents, to the caregivers that are working with these students outside. So to that end, we are very excited. We're starting a new program that's going to be starting up in just a week or so called FAST, which is all about bringing families together in the evening. They're going to have meals together. There's going to be some parent education. There's going to be time for students to have activities. And it's all about how do we support our families and our students together.
There's so many moving parts when it comes to this subject, even just the normal basically taking your kid to school kind of thing and all that. Then you add on all these other things and all these other moving parts to get people on the same page and to get a community on that same page. That's not easily done. Like, way to be. Like, that's awesome, you guys. That's really cool to see. And it's only growing stronger, I imagine, the longer this goes and the more time we have to be more familiar with a lot of this. Teachers being on the same page with each other is great, but also teachers being able to have each other's back, like being able to be share not just information, but just even a simple, how's your day going? You know, like being able to do that is really cool to see, too. That's a nice added part of this. And with all that being said, what are the challenges going forward with this? What are the things that you guys are looking not only as yourselves, but on the community to kind of maybe help with some of the heavy lifting going forward?
Well, sure. I mean, we always want our communities to support our youngest learners. You know, sometimes it's easy for people to see, you know, the high school is very visible, high school sports, high school theater, very visible in our community. But those students don't end up in high school, you know, by accident.
Yeah.
So we would love to have a community that really supports and understands the importance of our earliest learners and their needs. We are constantly, you know, working to have our students learn through play. We know that that's the work of children. And also their social emotional needs and how that they're able to function in their relationships even as early learners and what that means for how they're going to grow up and function as they get older into middle school and high school. So we're really looking at healthy academics, healthy social emotional, and healthy relationships even as they're very young. One of our new projects that we are so proud proud that we have the support of our community and our school board, is we will have a new playground at the Pitch Early Learning Center. That playground was designed years ago for an elementary building that had older students. So we have a playground that's been designed for the needs of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, and then also will be fully accessible for our students with special needs. So students that maybe are in wheelchairs, students who have maybe some issues with communication and letting us know their needs, that playground will be fully accessible to them, and then it will also be fenced in for ultimate safety so that we don't need to worry about whether students are outside of that playground zone. So installation should happen this spring or summer, depending on how the winter months go for us, and we're very excited to use that next year.
Well, I am a little grumpy that I'm too old to play on these new play sets. That got me. I'm saying that because I have nothing else I could say. That just got me. Did you happen to hear this story up in Minnesota? There was some kids, they're just in a grade school. They're going to having recess all the time, and they're noticing that the kids in wheelchairs, they don't get to play on any of the equipment. And it's Minnesota. It's this time of year. I mean, it's already hard enough to play out there, let alone if you're in a wheelchair. These kids took it on themselves to go to their teacher and say, we should have playground equipment for them. And the teacher's like, well, it's like $6,000, kids. I'm like, so? Like, these kids, like, they didn't blink an eye. They did raffles. They did, like, bake sales, all this stuff. Ended up raising the money. They're building the equipment this spring. Like, these kids that make this stuff happen. Like, we've done so many stories like this, and our community has a lot of this too, and it just it never gets old to me. Like, it's just that all kids are amazing, and every generation has had amazing kids. There's something about this young generation though, man. They're getting things done. They're not waiting for us to move out of the way and let them come in here. They're just getting stuff done from all of these ages. It's really cool to see. We're speaking with Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent, and Jennifer Wilhorn, 4K Administrator. We're going to take a very quick commercial break, come back, have some more conversation on Morning Magazine at WFHR.
Thursdays at 11:30, we are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Over the Back Fence has moved. Tune in on Saturdays at 11 a.m. for an hour of water cooler talk, items you're looking to buy or sell, upcoming events in central Wisconsin, or just whatever. Join the conversation by calling 715-424-2600, and we'll go over the back fence at its new day and time, Saturdays at 11 a.m., right before the Sunshine Polka Party Show. It's the audio community bulletin board that comes to you. We'll see you there.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered snow showers this afternoon, otherwise overcast. Highs level off around 32, west winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, lows dip down to about 9 above. Chance for snow again tomorrow, 15. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tomorrow with another dusting Sunday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 23.
Thanks a lot, Jennifer. Appreciate the updates. A big thank you to our friends at the Weather Eye Weather Center. We're sitting here having some great conversation with Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent, and Jennifer Wilhorn, 4K Administrator. Again, thanks for being here, guys. We were talking a little bit, we're talking a lot about Pitch Early Learning Center. I would like to touch on the community sites, if you don't mind, Jen.
Sure. So Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools has an excellent relationship with our community sites. And so we do have 4K sections at Building Blocks Learning Center, the YMCA, Wood County Head Start, and then also St. Lawrence. And so we work closely with our partners to have 4K sites in those different areas because we want to be sure that we're meeting the needs of our families. And so we have options for our families when they register for 4K for the site that would work best for them.
It's really helpful to be able to do that location wise, especially for so many families that can be a real divide. I don't have the time to do this, or I don't, you know, it's out of my way, or something like that. That's really unique to be able to offer. Is there ways, if I'm in a certain part of an area, I can find that information of like what one's closest to me?
Absolutely. We have a lot of information on our district website. There's a section devoted to 4K, and all the sites are listed there. And then when families register their children, they're able to select their choices, their top choices on the registration form, and we work as best we can to honor those choices. A lot of our selection is based on transportation, because we do provide busing for all of our 4K students, so we have to factor transportation in, but we always try to work with our families to honor their choices.
You know, my kids are all in their 20s. My youngest is 22 and everything. And it just, like, even just saying that out loud feels weird. But I can still remember taking her to kindergarten and some of the things that they were doing and seeing them do that and enjoying that, like, kind of peek into that world before I was shooed off and everything. And she didn't want me around anymore, nothing like that. When it comes to the programming that goes with 4K, I don't think we get an opportunity to look into that very often and see that and hear about that. Do you mind if we talk a little bit about the programming with the 4K schools?
Sure, absolutely. So like I mentioned earlier, we are play-based. We want our students to engage in the work of play and to do that learning through a playful environment. That being said, we do still touch on some of those pre-academic skills. So we're working on things like shapes and colors and letters and alphabet and some early math skills as well. But we do try to do that through playful activities, through small groups, through songs, through stories. We want, our ultimate goal is that when our students leave 4K, that they feel confident as learners and as part of our school system. We want them to head to kindergarten knowing that this is something that they can do.
Certainly the point of 4K is to be able to do those things, but also to make sure that not only do the kids have a chance to kind of get an early taste of what school is like, for parents to understand a little of this and how hard it is for parents to let their kids go to school and everything. Some are pushing their kids. No, I'm just kidding. But all these things that are difficult can be, especially if you're a first-time parent or you're, you know, just a young kid and everything. I think it's great for us that don't have kids in school, that haven't been a lot of this, to hear this stuff. Got a lot of outside noise nowadays about what's going on in classrooms from people who haven't been in the classroom in 20, 30 years. It's nice to hear this stuff. To many of us that have a rational brain, we understand that these are pretty much the basic things that have been going on and stuff. But not only is it fun to hear, I'll be honest, I think of little kids doing this stuff, and it just brings a smile to my face. But I think that part of things, too, it's nice to kind of quiet that down a little bit. It doesn't hurt. Are there some things as far as the programming goes that are newer that you've enjoyed or that the teachers have enjoyed there and stuff? Because I know we're always progressing with the way that we're able to teach kids or the different techniques that we're using.
Sure. So one of the things that we implemented just this year is some new math programming. So we looked at the resources that our kindergarten through fifth grade students were using and learned that they did have a portion of that was appropriate for our 4K students. And so they have been implementing things called Number Corner and Workplaces, which Number Corner is a way that we can get those early math skills in a group setting. So through calendar, through counting together, those types of things. And then the workplaces are small group centers that the students are able to work on to kind of reinforce those skills. And teachers are able to adapt that to meet the needs of their students. You know, some students may need individual practice, some may happen in a small group, but they're able to use that flexibly so that we can introduce some of those early math concepts so that, again, students are headed to kindergarten feeling confident in what they're doing.
Kind of a question for both of you here. We see a lot of the statistics usually at the end of the year, the beginning of the year, of where maybe a state or a county is in education, the math numbers here, the literature there. And then you see, of course, the nation numbers, how we compare to other countries and all of this. And I think there's good and bad you can take from all that. And there's so much gray area involved in all of that. But we see these numbers regardless. How do they affect you all in the industry, in the field, when you see these things, and you may see, let's say just locally here, if you saw that the math numbers were going down, does that make you reassess maybe what you're doing with the classroom or in the classroom? And I don't mean to ask such a big, broad question. I apologize for that, but it's a topic that comes up quite a bit, and I don't get a chance to talk to people in the field very often. Does it affect what you guys do that much, or is it something that you kind of, well, I'm in the field, I know what these kids are doing with, and every kid is an individual case, so I kind of stick with what we're doing.
You know, that it's an excellent question, and one of the pieces that you might hear, and I don't know that I've heard it locally, you know, in the last several years while I've been here in Rapids, but you hear on occasion, well, that the school board doesn't even ever talk about academic achievement. And I think that's ironic. It's ironic insofar as you lay out that conversation you just laid out. There isn't a day that goes by, and in my job, which admittedly is probably the most removed from direct student contact of any job in our organization, don't think about academic achievement and what kids are doing. But we also have to be cognizant of the fact, and this was the piece that was striking me, and I was hoping I was going to be able to jump in and include at some point, was as Jen's talking about in early childhood in 4K, about what's developmentally appropriate for a kid. And if I'm talking to anybody out there that's a parent or a grandparent, regardless if your kids are 2 and 5 or 52 and 56, we're human beings. And human beings develop at different levels and different rates and have attributes and skills that, to varying degrees. But of course, we all bring something to the table. When you're talking about early childhood and 4K, for example, as the focus of today's conversation, that is more true than when you're 40 or than when you're 18, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, clearly, there's a development that takes place, arguably until you're probably, I don't know, 16, 17, 18-ish, depending. And for me, being a guy and kind of an idiot, maybe 24, 25, right, before you get your head on your shoulders.
You're not alone.
Yeah. So I would point that out. And here's the backdrop of that. So do we look at these things and be like, oh, my God, we're in a crisis. What do we do? No, you can't. That would be ludicrous. The reason being is, you may not know. Maybe your snapshot is too short. Maybe the time that's elapsed is too short. Perhaps it is a human being at that moment in time, if we take this as individual people, which of course our kids are, that didn't do so well on that particular assessment. Mm-hmm. What are we assessing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so it is that long-term trajectory, which also then allows an opportunity for the public or those that are not in the know to reflect on historical achievement data and be like, oh my God, this is just atrocious, which might be true. It also might not be true, or it might be a confluence of factors, which is what reality tells you.
Right.
So a number of things happen to impact that. Primarily, we're humans. Mm. Mm-hmm. Secondarily, in education, you're not going to turn on a dime in a brief moment, like in 6 months, a year, even 2 years, and be like, oh, what we're doing is clearly not working, unless it's a total catastrophe, yeah. which that is very, very rare. You're going to be like, okay, what's going on here? What can we tweak? What are we doing that we aren't we doing that we should be doing? What are we doing we shouldn't be doing? Is it individual student issues? Is it societal or trend issues? Is it a combination of those factors? And you work through that. Mm-hmm. But one thing you wouldn't do, which ironically our state has done in the past, and that is continue to change the assessment, for example,
or continue
to change how you're doing it, because how in the heck would any human being know what there's no basis of comparison there. And so one of the pieces that I guess I'll end with is the idea that, you know, this can be portrayed as, oh, well, yeah, of course, he's just trying to make the school district look good, and blah, 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 blah. They're really not. They're doing horrible things for kids at that school. Mm. Come on. I mean, that's the craziest thing you would ever think anybody would say, number one. And number two, the idea that, the state has moved the target in terms of assessments multiple times in my career is 100% legitimate. The idea that kids, again, operate because they're human beings, too, is 100% legitimate. The idea that tests are no more than a snapshot in time. And as a former science nerd, I'm a current science nerd, I suppose, too. Mm-hmm. I know how important data is. I know how important it is to be reflective. But on the same hand, if we're going to live and die by the performance of a kid or a group of kids on one stupid state level assessment, that's crazy. And then what we do is politicize that nonsense, right?
Yeah.
And so I think at the center of it, the question is, what are we doing for kids on a regular basis that help kids be decent human beings? And test them isn't a thing that I'd throw out there, right? Yeah. But knowing what we're doing and how we're operating makes all kinds of sense, and then making informed decisions as time progresses. That is of utmost importance when we're talking specifically about early childhood, because there is mounds and mounds and mounds and mounds of research evidence, as well as anecdotal evidence, that early intervention and appropriate intervention is the best intervention. And you can talk about that in education. You can talk about that in behavior and societal trends in terms of drug use and or risky behaviors. And that's not because when you're 3, you're exhibiting those things, but that is that if we intervene when you're 3, 4, or 5, I'm probably not going to have to spend as much time, money, energy, and have as many entities involved as though we're rectifying those issues when you're 15, 16, or 20. And that's common sense, which is why that investment in particular in early childhood education is super important.
Very well said. I wish we just needed another minute. We could have just ended this episode right there. That was perfect, Greg. Thank you for that. This is part of the reason why we appreciate you being in this position. Jennifer, we've talked about a couple of things. I wanted to go back to the FAST program you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It sounded really cool and really interesting. How can people register or find out more about that?
So currently we have our families registered at Pitch. And so this is our first year of doing it, so it's a little bit of a trial for us.
Yeah.
So we are hopeful that next year we will be able to continue that. We were fortunate to be able to fund it through a grant, and so hopefully we'll be able to continue that in the future, and we're excited about what that means for our families.
And if people have follow-up questions, Jennifer, they want to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, is there a way to reach you?
Absolutely. My contact information is on the WRPS website. For families that are interested in learning more about the 4K program, we do have an information session coming up on Thursday, February 23rd at 5 p.m. at the Pitch Early Learning Center, and that will be about all of our 4K. We will have representatives from our community sites and our other WRPS sites as well there that night. And then registration for 4K starts on March 1st, so we're excited to see so many of our families and students coming out to register.
Craig, if people have follow-up questions for you, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, I'm easy to find. If you Google me, you find all kinds of contact information, but 715-424-6701, and of course my email address and whatnot's all.